You're listening to an SBS News podcast.
This is a lifelong conversation that we're all going to be a part of. And we need to see it in that way. If you need a break, take a break. Come back to it later. Don't see it as an all or nothing. Don't let yourself burn out. We've got too much pressure to let something like this take away the positive change that we can create for our kids.
Extreme weather events, whether floods, fires, or cyclones, have become increasingly common. Scientists say they're fueled by climate change and that the world is currently off track to limit a global temperature rise to prevent the worst impacts of the climate crisis. Nick Seaton is the CEO of an activist group called Parents for Climate, and he wants to do something about it. I'm Sophie Bennett, and in this episode of The Beta Blueprint, we'll discuss how parents can help influence change and how to navigate climate conversations with young kids. Thanks for joining me, Nick. To start with, why did you get into climate activism?
Well, I grew up on the fringes of suburbs in Logan in Queensland and really saw a lot of expansion and just with the local community, like felt very concerned about, you know, new freeways and the removal of forests. And then as I grew older, I realized that, you know, this is actually a big global condition that we've kind of industrialized to the point of actually undermining our own ecosystems. And I got really engaged in climate. I signed up for everything I could find to sort of campaign and make a difference. And then 7 years ago, I became a dad, and that's when it all got very real in a different way. I sort of stopped thinking about climate change and started feeling it, particularly during the Black Summer bushfires. My three-year-old boy at the time suffered quite acute bronchiolitis and was hospitalized a few times with need for oxygen. And he was, you know, one of thousands of kids who were struggling to breathe under 90 days of constant smoke. And we were in Sydney, like we're not in the middle of the bush, but we were really feeling it hard. And it felt very personal. It's hard to describe, but if you've ever had a moment where your kid is in danger and you want to do something to protect them, it's very, very motivating. And I saw Parents for Climate around that time. And I thought, you know, that's absolutely the organization I want to be a part of and to help other parents respond to that constructively and make a difference for their kids.
Yeah, I remember that summer. It was truly horrible. So with the Parents for Climate group, can you tell me a bit more about it?
So I literally just saw a notice in a cafe window in the inner west of Sydney, and it just said, like, come along, we're just having a meetup, we're doing a play group, bring your kids, like, we've got toys, we're having a chat about climate change. And I thought, well, that's a great place to start, because most parents don't really know what actions to take or don't have a lot of time. But if you can fit it in because you need a play date and, frankly, socializing your kids and meeting some other parents is pretty important to you, especially with young kids, that just fit our schedule beautifully. And so it just so happened to be that, you know, we were coming together for that and for a kind of positive conversation about climate action. And yeah, I really found a home there.
When you mentioned before that you said you started really feeling climate change rather than just being aware of it, would you describe that feeling as climate anxiety or a heightened level of fear?
Definitely, I'm one of those people that want to know as much as possible on the issues of things like climate change. And I do as much reading as I can and reading different perspectives. And I think it sort of, yeah, led me to understand that we're going to struggle to deal with some of the fallout of climate impacts for the next few decades, as a community, as society, and also just as individual families. And this really hit home when I was talking to Professor Mark Howden. So he's an ANU climate scientist and one of the lead authors on the impacts report from the most recent international panel on climate change. And he is also a dad. And he said, yeah, look, I'd gladly talk to your community online. We ran a webinar, and people just sort of said, like, how bad is it? And it was a hard conversation because he really sort of said, this is what we know could happen. But he also said something that was very motivating, which was, we could turn this around in the lifetimes of ourselves, not just our kids, but our own eyes could witness our kids' world becoming safer from a climate perspective if we get it right, if we get on top of this. The next few decades will be hard, but there is a world we will live in if we get it right. And that's so powerful to hear, because while knowing your kids have to go through so much growing up and all the change that comes with that, and there's going to be hard times, you accept that and still do everything you can to set them up for success. And I think climate change is no different.
Okay, so when it comes to practical action, what are you doing now as a parent?
Look, I sometimes describe Parents for Climate as both a home for those parents who maybe are starting their journey on into climate action and just need a sense of community and to be seen and heard and felt and respected and belong. But it's also a strategy. Parents for Climate plays a really big role in power and politics because 12.5 million Australians are parents. It's the majority of voters. There might be grandparents, there might be carers, there might be single parents, but we've all got this innate prioritizing of our kids' best interests going on. And research in the Climate Compass, which looks at attitudinal profiles towards climate change, shows us that about a quarter of those parents are already alarmed or alert. They're engaged, they're switched on to wanting to do something about climate change. But another quarter, the bit that sort of start to cross over into the middle of the normal curve, they're concerned, but they're quite passive. They're not given the time, space, opportunity, or access to make a difference. And that's what our organization is focused on, is working with those people who are active to really connect with and support those who aren't yet active, but if asked, have a strong opinion to express and want to see things that are in the best interest of their kids. And that could be really powerful. And we're already seeing it play out. The current parliament has a crossbench made up of climate champions, which wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the mums in particular in those electorates who decided to change their vote from their traditional pathway to that particular option.
So you're talking about driving political change, but maybe not through some of the more reactionary ways that we tend to see in the media, like people throwing paint on famous artworks or blocking ports and roads.
That's right. I think the media is really good at showing those moments, those peaks of conflict or action that are maybe a bit more polarizing. And to be honest with you, I know that very well because my background, I spent 7 years working with Greenpeace in different countries. I specialized in how to engage audiences and get their attention on issues by creating big spectacles and polarization moments. Like to give you an example, back in the like early 2000 tweens, I was figuring out how to attach iPhone cameras to the tops of climbers' helmets so that a team of female climbers could scale the outside of London's tallest building and hang a banner. And we managed to get the attention, according to YouGov polling, of half the country in the UK during that moment.
It's interesting too that you've come from that background working with Greenpeace and doing those big stunts. Do you still believe that they're effective?
Yeah, in climate campaign circles, we often refer to this as like different theories of change. Like, how does change happen? And generally speaking, we don't all agree on the theory of change, but we all agree that we need all of them because we don't know which one's going to be the most effective till we try it. And the metaphor I use is if you want to put out a fire, you're going to need a pretty big blanket, and you're not going to be able to be covering every corner yourself. You're going to need a lot of people tanking on different corners. Like, one succinct way to put it is, we need to build bridges on climate. We've learned in Australia that polarization, partisanship, and extreme points of view can cost us so much time and so much energy and so much missed opportunity. We've got to build common ground. We've got to agree on the principles that's in everybody's best interest because this isn't an us versus them. That's totally manufactured and made up. It's everybody's kids all together. Let's get it done for them.
Your children are 4 and 7. Have you started discussing the climate with them? How do you plan to navigate those conversations?
I think on a personal level, the conversation we have in our family about climate change, we've done a bit of reading and we've made some of these resources available on the Parents for Climate website. It's important not to go too heavy, too hard, and too strong on the emotion side of this conversation. Like, these are big conversations. Any big world issues, global conflict, health and pandemics, climate change, you don't just drop it all on top of your kids with all of your feelings. You've got to listen to them first. So you've got to ask them, what do you know? What have you heard? How are you feeling about this? And get a read on where they're at so that you're not trying to shape it. then you've got to check yourself. How do you feel as a parent? And if you're not in the right emotional space to be giving them a constructive and positive direction, don't go there. Just take a break. You don't have to solve the problem with them in every moment. But of course, if you are ready to listen to them and say, okay, where are you at? Got it. Let's talk about this and talk about it in constructive terms because it's a problem that we are solving. And it's always got to be in that frame because if we say to kids, this is a problem and there's nothing you can do about it, that's so disempowering. It's not good for their self-esteem. It's not good for their mental health at any age. And it's also not true. You know, we're at halfway to our 2030 target already on renewable energy. Like we're seeing 40% in Australia. Like there's terrific examples of how renewable energy or, you know, climate solutions are happening at a grand pace that is actually really exciting. And so it's really useful to point to those examples of this is how we're dealing with this problem and talk about how would you like to engage with that? They might talk about careers or ideas, or they might say, let's, you know, do some art and drawing and create pictures. Sometimes when I go into classrooms, I really love pulling up a slide that comes from a Bluey episode where they picture the future. They just do a sort of brief landscape. And they picture the future of what Bluey might look like when she's an adult. And the kids point to the screen and they call out all the things they can see, like solar panels and like, you know, the plants are on the buildings and the car is electric. Like it's really exciting to think about the future we're building together. And I think that's the attitude we need to give our kids so that it builds them up, makes them feel strong and resilient, and also gives them some control.
So being in classrooms and having your kids at home, do you think this generation will be different to previous ones?
Definitely. I think, and you know, the teachers do an amazing job here when kids are learning about, you know, influence and media or discourse or advertising or, you know, geography and, you know, weather cycles and rain patterns. And they're coming home with this like immense interest and fascination in what they're seeing in the real world, not just at school, how the weather's behaving. And so we're talking about it all the time. I think, you know, it's something that we just need to be ready for. Like, there will be a lot of changes in our own world. Right now, for example, our organization's looking at the fact that for the last few years, we've had a pattern of the back to school week being one of the most heavily impacted in Australia by unnatural weather disasters. We're observing this stuff, and our kids are too. And it's hard to know where things will happen and when, but we need to be ready to have those conversations and to equip the kids with the understanding. We also need to be ready as a conversation to have, as a community, we need to be ready to have a conversation about what types of changes might we need to make. How can we set schools up so that they have solar powered air conditioning with a battery that's resilient to power outages during heat waves? Because that's an issue that's affecting kids' health and their access to education. Or, as in the case of countries like the Philippines, do we actually need to talk about, and I know this might alarm some parents who are just done with the school holidays this year. Do we need to talk about moving the academic calendar? Because if the first week back at school is too heavily exposed to risk, particularly risk to health, but also education, we might need to think about how to adjust to that, even if it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's interesting. What other changes do you think need to be happening right now?
Yeah, look, this all kind of falls out from solving climate change for kids. Can be boiled down to like a few basic points. We need to make sure that we stop making the problem worse. And so we're talking to parents about what kind of products are you experiencing that might be creating unnecessary pollution or not necessarily accounting for that pollution accurately. Another aspect is that we need to make sure that kids are safe at school and in any environments they go to. That means, you know, looking at what are the adjustments we need to make to keeping them safe from a lot of the impacts we can't avoid. Schools should be resilient places of learning. We already know that childcare centres have a legal requirement to maintain safe air temperatures, for example. Schools need to be supported to do that too. Many states have already done significant air conditioning rollouts. There are still massive gaps in some states. And that really needs to be backed up by clean energy and solar panels because ultimately that is just the most cost-effective way of getting it done. Schools are open during the day, they cool during the day, and they need to use that daytime energy. It also creates a different kind of grid equation, which can benefit community at large when it comes to solar supply and renewable energy and its impact on wholesale electricity prices. We also want to make sure that kids are safe at home. Unfortunately, not all homes are able to do that without support. You've got low-income homes, you've got renters, you've got social housing that just don't have the agency or the autonomy to make changes to their living conditions, and frankly, should be supported to also have an efficient all-electric and air-conditionable home so that they can withstand the worst effects of heat and storms. And lastly, we just need to make sure we're getting it done in a way that's really visible to our kids. We want to make sure that we're building essentially resilient infrastructure in the form of schools and childcare centres in particular that are powered and backed by solar and batteries, because we think at scale, not only could that be fantastic for the equation of each of those individual centres and sites, but at scale, that would actually be a significant change. Like, top 10 electricity users, if you include all the energy and carbon that goes into schools and drop-offs and all of this, we could be talking about the fifth biggest energy consumer industry in Australia. It's just getting our kids t educated at high school and primary school and childcare centres. If we tackle that by saying, well, why don't we just use that roof space, that huge roof space, to turn that around? Then we can get that done. And that's something that we've been working on. Some states have worked with us towards some progress. We've seen about 71 million across three states unlocked to fund solar and battery installations. We think it should be Australia-wide. It's a bit of a no-brainer. And I think a lot of the politicians we're talking to agree with us. We just need to get it up the hierarchy of issues on their agenda.
It's good to hear you talk about those large-scale projects. Just reflecting on my own childhood, there was a lot of talk around individual action, like recycling and eating less meat. And obviously, while they're good things to do, just that list of things you've just said, it's clearly putting the responsibility on governments or businesses rather than only individuals. Do you think there has been a transition in the way people consider who is responsible when it comes to climate change?
I think so. I think a lot of Australians are sort of coy to the notion that they are responsible for this. This is a bigger systemic issue, and we see it in polling across, polling from all sides of the spectrum, hearing that Australians want more action from government, they want more action from industry and business. They get that those actors are capable of making differences that an individual simply can't by themselves. But also, it's potentially really positive to think about individual action, because if you show your kids in your own life that you take care, you do some active transport, go walking or bike riding rather than driving your car on the occasion, just because it's good for us and it's the kind of world that we want to create. Show how you're managing your own household waste, things like that. Not only does that help your kids sort of see and feel and get involved and feel quite a degree of agency and empowerment, it also helps us all to sort of like see ourselves as agents of change, and just to feel good about being making that little difference that we can make. Because at the end of the day, these are big issues that are beyond the capability of an individual. So we have to think, well, what can we control, and focus on that. But I highly recommend connecting with others, because if we connect, we get stronger, and that means we can affect the big picture. And that's something that we're focused on doing. So we are trying to present big ideas to parents so that we can get them on board. But of course, it starts with, what can we do at home, and how can we get our kids involved? And that's something to be really proud of as well. I think the number one trap that I want people to watch out for is feeling like they're not doing enough. I mean, God, it's hard enough as a parent these days to not feel guilty for spending too much time at work, or not doing, everything you can for your kids, or all of those extra clubs you could be going to with their sports involvement or whatever. Like, take the pressure off. You're not responsible for this issue. Do what you can. And if, the best you can do right now means you have to use a product that might not be perfect, that's fine. Let's focus on working together to fix the supply chain so that you're not responsible for that decision on your own.
Yeah, I think that's an important message to send out. And just quickly before we wrap up, is there any other advice you have for parents navigating climate activism and raising kids?
This is a lifelong conversation that we're all going to be a part of, and we need to see it in that way. If you need a break, take a break. Come back to it later. Don't see it as an all or nothing. Don't let yourself burn out. We've got too much pressure to let something like this take away the positive change that we can create for our kids. So I do want to remind everybody, particularly parents, that like the world's not on your shoulders. Let's shoulder it all together, because you're not alone. And you don't have to do it all the time.
That was Nick Seaton. I'm Sophie Bennett, and you've been listening to the Beta Blueprint.